Inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldview.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio Network. Good to be with you today on the program. Walker Wildman here with you. The Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm your host on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Rick Green is your host on Tuesday, Thursday. And so it's Monday and you got me today. A little bit of a programming note. Rick will be with you tomorrow live. Fred Jackson will be with you on Wednesday. I'll be traveling. And then, of course, I'll be back with you on Friday. Rick will be with you on Thursday. But just a little bit of a note there. Hey, you heard coming into the show there, you heard Mickey Addison talking about the ARC, AFA at the ARC. That's where we'll be in October. But between now and then, we have Marriage Family Life, Marriage Family Life, July 6th through the 8th. July 6th through the 8th is Marriage Family Life Conference. We'll be here in Tupelo, Mississippi at the Cadence Bank Arena. So we hope you'll join us for that. Marriage Family Life, that registration, by the way, closes this week. So after this week, registration will close for our Marriage Family Life Conference in July, July 6th through the 8th. You can go over to afa.net/events, afa.net/events, and register there. And you can see all of the events that we're doing in the next few months over at afa.net/events. We are in Psalm chapter 71 today. Psalm chapter 71. David says, "In you, O Lord, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge, to which I may continually come. You have given the command to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress." So to the believer, to the Christian, the Lord should be our rock and our refuge. That's the way David describes the Lord. He says, "Be to me a rock of a refuge." So may the Lord be our rock and be our refuge. That's Psalm chapter 71. Well, we'll have some special guests with us today. We'll have State Senator Chris McDaniel on with us in the next segment. He'll be in studio with us. Mississippi State Senator Chris McDaniel, he's running for the lieutenant governor seat in Mississippi. Also, we'll in the last segment, we'll talk to a gentleman by the name of Lee Watson. Lee is he's a foster care chaplain, also advocate for frontline family advocacy. He's the founder and the CEO of that organization, FLFA. But he's been working in Mississippi on some foster care reform legislation, which is very fascinating, a very, very serious topic for a lot of people who either have been or want to be foster parents. So we'll talk with Lee Watson in the last segment on that topic of foster care, and he'll be in with us there. And that's this topic of foster care is really applicable all around the nation in various states. I know each state varies on their state laws and revolving around foster care, but it's still a very important topic that really needs reform at many, many levels. So we'll talk with Lee Watson about that. The first topic I want to get to today, leading off the show, is I want to really, to borrow Jen Psaki's phrase, I want to circle back to the story I covered last week out of New York City, and there wasn't much to offer other than the base details. But this tragedy, and that it is a tragedy, in New York City involving a gentleman by the name of Jordan Neely and this U.S. Marine vet. Turns out he's not active duty. He's a U.S. Marine veteran. I thought he was active duty as well. But nonetheless, they got in this scuffle on the subway in New York City, and it ended tragically. It ended tragically. Supposedly or reportedly, Jordan Neely is a well-known homeless man that has a long criminal rap sheet, and he was harassing people on this train, and that's really the most we know right now. And this former Marine stepped in and was trying to really prevent the harassment and at least subdue the individual until police got there. And it ended with the death of Jordan Neely. So that's a little bit of the background here. But the full rap sheet of Jordan Neely was really unknown until recently, at least the specifics here. But I came across this story in Newsweek. Listen to this. Jordan Neely had 42 prior arrests. 42. Not two, not four. 42 prior arrests. He had been admitted to the hospital for mental health issues on multiple occasions. I mean, pretty much, I think it's safe to say that the officers in this precinct, in this district, knew this guy by name when they got calls. 42 prior arrests. And so it really sets up, really, this is the epitome or the, like, prime example of New York's failed criminal code, and specifically New York City. And this is what happens when you don't have law and order. When you don't have law and order, you allow repeat offenders to go back on the streets, and eventually it becomes fatal. It's just a matter of time. And that's unfortunately what happened with Jordan Neely. And look, there's apparently reportedly a grand jury convening now to look at the details here. But I think we need to be very careful to criticize or to say anything negative towards this Marine vet, because he was put in a bad position that really he should have never been put in to begin with. And I think that's what's most frustrating for me is everybody's wanting to Monday morning quarterback this Marine vet, when reality, why aren't we Monday morning quarterbacking the elected officials in New York State and New York City? We don't ever do that. We don't ever talk about, well, who allowed this guy to be let out of jail 42 times? Like, why don't we have that conversation? No, we don't talk about that. We talk about the unarmed Marine vet that was forced to defend himself and defend others on this train ride. I mean, it's basically be a victim or defend yourselves. That's pretty much the binary choice here, is defend yourself, defend others, or become a victim. And what does become a victim look like? Who knows? It could mean death. We don't know. But this Marine vet stepped up and did what he thought was the right thing by subduing the individual, and it ended fatally. All right? So that's the background here. But what needs to be part of the larger discussion is why on earth someone who's been arrested 42 times is still on the streets. This is ridiculous. This is why I would not live in New York City. You couldn't pay me to live in New York City. Because do you think this Marine vet woke up and said, yep, I'm gonna go manhandle a guy on the train? No. He had no idea what was going to happen that day. But he gets put in this terrible situation where it's basically he get assaulted and everybody else get assaulted and who knows what else happens, or he defends himself, and he chose to defend himself. And so this is a case, a prime case of failed Democrat leadership. And this is going on in major cities all around the country. You couldn't pay me to live there, because you got good people going to jail because they defend themselves. And that is the prime problem here. On this same note, let's shift over to Texas. So we had two tragedies in Texas this weekend. We had the Allen, Texas Outlet Mall mass shooting, which is horrendous. But you also had this Brownsville incident in Brownsville, Texas, where this guy named George Alvarez, or Jorge Alvarez, depending on how you want to pronounce it, 34 years old, he mowed down, and we're not sure, it looked very intentional, but we're not 100% certain yet whether he was under the influence and hit these individuals or whether it was intentional. But nonetheless, he drove into a crowd of immigrants, many of them probably illegal or being processed, on at a bus stop in Brownsville, Texas. 7 dead, 6 injured is the latest count in Brownsville, Texas. But after this happened, people immediately began looking into, well, who did this? What's the guy? What's the background? And looking at his count, he's got a long rap sheet, too, almost as long as Jordan Neely out of New York City. And this is in Texas, folks. This is in Texas. Bright red Texas. Conservative country. This Alvarez guy, 34 years old, listen to his rap sheet. 2 aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. 1 assault against elderly or disabled. 4 assault causing bodily injury to a family member. 1 assault of a public servant. 2 burglary of a vehicle. 1 assault causing bodily injury. These are all separate incidents, by the way. Separate charges, rather. Not separate scenarios. Separate charges. 2 criminal mischief. 1 driving while intoxicated. 1 evading arrest detention. 1 interference with public duties. 1 obstruction or retaliation. 1 possession of marijuana. 3 resisting search or transport. Resisting arrest. 1 theft of property. So that's like, I just listed out about 15 to 20 charges. So why was Jorge Alvarez on the streets? Why was he driving the car in Brownsville, Texas? And this often gets overlooked because people think government is here to, I don't know, pay the bills or, you know, send everybody a check or, you know, run our energy policy or run our economic policy and all this other stuff that's not really within the primary purview of government. One of the fundamental duties of government is to protect its citizens. If you don't believe me, read Romans 13. Folks, this is not just America stuff. This is biblical stuff. These are fundamental principles that have been around since the dawn of creation. Read Romans chapter 13, verse 1. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which is from God. Moving on to verse 2, that was just part of verse 1. Verse 2, consequently, whoever resists authority is opposing what God has set in place. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Listen to this, verse 3. For rulers are not a terror to good content, to good conduct, but to bad. Do you want to be unafraid of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and you will have his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. This is talking about government in proper context. If government was doing what it was supposed to be doing. Going on in verse 4 here, but if you do wrong, be afraid. For he does not carry the sword in vain. He is God's servant, an agent of retribution to the wrongdoer. That's what government's supposed to be. Romans 13, verse 4. Government is supposed to be an agent of retribution to the wrongdoer. But the way we've got it set up now in many places around the country is the government has become an agent of retribution to the good person, to the person doing the right thing. So we've got Romans 13 upside down in many places around the country, and this has to change. Bad people must face consequences. There is no room for the soft on crime insanity that we see around the nation. We'll be back in a few.
Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its tops in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Jeffrey Hinton, a cognitive psychologist and computer scientist known as the godfather of AI, resigned from Google due to his concerns about AI. The veteran computer scientist is alarmed that AI tools often exhibit unexpected behavior as it teaches itself new information. He said the idea that this stuff could actually get smarter than people, most thought, was a way off. I thought it was 30 to 50 years or even longer away. Obviously, I no longer think that.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner. Or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Here's Ellis Kraft of Reach a Village Ministries.
Radu is a 13-year-old boy from Moldova who lives with his three sisters and mother in a small apartment. His mom suffers from mental health issues. His father is absent. This 13-year-old has to fish to help provide for his family. A Reach a Village partner invited Radu to a Bible study. His sisters eventually attended, and they all felt God's love and peace. Eventually, their mother also accepted Jesus as Lord. Radu and his whole family now know that God is their only hope. Will you help reach more children in poor villages? Your gift will be doubled today. $50 would reach 100 children. $500 would reach 1,000 children. I want you to go to reachavillage.org or call 833-7-REACH-7. Again, that's 833-7-REACH-7.
Hey friends, it's Jessica Peck, Dr. Nurse Mama, as your one-minute parenting coach. What were you thinking? Every parent is guilty of asking this rhetorical question when teens make a poor choice. But brain function for decision-making doesn't mature until the early 20s. What if, instead of framing that mistake as a moral or spiritual failure, we view it as a decision-making failure? Our teens need us to help them navigate a complex world with high-stakes decisions. Coaching them goes something like this. You made a choice you regret. I know that hurts. Let's talk through how you made this decision to see where you could make different choices. I have faith you'll learn from this. I'll see you on the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast here on American Family Radio.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today. Well, if you're wondering where my voice went, I had a little bit too much fun at a wedding on Saturday night, playing some good 70s, 80s music. And
you said you were sick.
Well, it's losing my voice is about equal to being sick when you do talk radio for a living. So I did sing a little bit too loud, a little bit too much at a wedding. One of my cousins got married Saturday here in Tupelo, so we had a good time. But I'm suffering the consequences now of that trying to be a musician, and I'm not. But nonetheless, here we are, and that's why I sound a little bit different. Hopefully, by later in the week, I'll have it 100% back. Chris McDaniel's in with us now, Mississippi State Senator, of course from the state of Mississippi. Chris, thanks.
Thanks for having me. I'm still trying to envision whether you were singing the Bee Gees or ABBA.
You know, probably a little bit of both. Probably a little bit of both.
Probably should keep that quiet.
Yeah.
Probably should keep that quiet. I would love to hear it, though.
Yeah.
Do you have anything left?
No. I can't offer anything good right now. I'm barely making it through the show. No, on a serious note, Chris, you've been in the state legislature for some time now. You ran for the U.S. Senate seat against Thad Cochran back in, 2014?
Yes, sir, 2014.
And a very, very tight race there against an incumbent, longtime incumbent, by the way, which is very hard to unseat. And that was literally neck and neck there. Yeah. But you're running this cycle for the lieutenant governor seat in the state of Mississippi. So give us a little background here.
Absolutely. Like most Americans, I'm alarmed at the direction the country is heading. The last 20 years have been devastating. And I use that. I talk about my dad a lot because I lost him roughly 20 years ago. And I often say that he would not recognize this country right now. And so I'm alarmed. I'm angry, and I want to see change. And I believe that Mississippi is the best state to effectuate that change. Washington cannot fix itself. It's not going to be able to.
Yeah.
We have to do it locally, right here in this state, and then find a way to push back against Biden and push back against liberalism, wherever it is. And it turns out that in this state right now, we do have a very liberal lieutenant governor. Now, he pretends he's a Republican, but he's not. And we know that by the fruit that he's bearing, right? Because even there in the Senate, where we only have 16 Democrats, Delbert Hosemann appointed 13 of those 16 to be powerful chairmen.
Yeah.
There's no place for that in the system. He's the reason we could not eliminate the income tax. He's killed almost every significant conservative piece of reform legislation that we've had. Look, if we're fighting for the country, and the Democrats have told us just how damaging they're going to be, mm-hmm. we're not supposed to promote them or reach across the aisle to them. Our job is to defeat them. We have to stand for right. We have to be right every time and be a principal fighter for the state, and that's what I want to be.
Yeah, and you know, you and I were talking this morning after our time of prayer at 8 o'clock this morning, but about how the Marxists and the God-haters, they're not satisfied with anything. They want to continually run us down, shut us down, shut us up, and eliminate us really from the public square altogether.
Right.
And some of them would probably be glad if we were in jail, and that they would say that. These are radical people. But one thing, Chris, that's been frustrating in Mississippi, I know people look on Mississippi and they say, well, Mississippi's pretty conservative. Well, and that's the case from an electoral standpoint, from a voter standpoint. But we really had to fight tooth and nail to get the good stuff we've gotten through the state legislature. We've had to fight tooth and nail. That hasn't been easy. It really should be easy when you look at the breakdown of our state. But talk a little bit about stuff that we should have easily gotten through the state legislature, like religious freedom for these shots and educational freedom. I mean, these are things that are like Republican tenets, you know, in the playbook, and we can't even get this stuff through.
It's just crazy. You're talking about margins of supermajority Republicans versus Democrats. Right now we have 36 Republicans in the Senate, only 16 Democrats. To your point, we should pass everything we've ever dreamt of without any issues. Religious liberty, exemptions for those vaccines, term limits, recall mechanisms, a good solid ballot initiative, protection of these kids, their ability to pray, their ability to learn about Jesus and God in schools, to push back, but not just push back, to eliminate the woke culture in the society. I want to be really clear. The idea we're going to send these kids to schools and universities for them to be brainwashed and then come back as little socialists, those days are going to end in Mississippi. If we have to defund, we'll defund. If we have to fight, we'll fight. But the idea that liberalism is going to brainwash our children, that has to end right now. So you've got all these issues where Republicans should be governing as Republicans, but we're not. In a large part, Delbert Hosemann has been the problem. Let me tell you how much so.
Yeah.
The American Conservative Union will score these states every year from Republican or from conservative to liberal, right? Mississippi right now, according to the American Conservative Union, has the second most liberal state scorecard in the southeastern United States. To put that in perspective, Michigan has a more conservative legislature than Mississippi.
Wow.
That's inexcusable, and that's Delbert Hosemann's fault.
Yeah, and I can just tell you, you know, Jameson Taylor, our good friend Jameson Taylor, he works on the policy front for AFA, but I mean, he himself's run into hurdles trying to get bills through on the Senate side with the lieutenant governor's office, etc. What would you say? We've got two issues that Mississippi is not doing well in, and we talked about this earlier, but we've got the education front, the education lobby, and we're not talking about teachers. We're talking about the higher-ups, the education lobby, and honestly, the unions and the lobbyists, which aren't even teachers. Right. We've got a big problem with the education lobby, and we can't seem to get school choice passed in Mississippi. It's just been a never-ending battle. And then on the vaccine front, getting a religious vaccine exemption seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The science is behind it. The Constitution is behind it. Those two issues have been very critical. Do you think, should you become lieutenant governor, we could force some of this stuff through the legislature?
Oh, absolutely. The issue as to religious exemptions, that goes to a basic fundamental right that we all enjoy as Americans. Mm-hmm. And our rights aren't granted to us by government. We're born with those rights. God granted us these rights. Among those rights are religious liberty. So if you have a strongly held religious belief, or what the courts call a sincerely held religious belief, the state can't trespass over that. That includes vaccines. Now, as to the issue of education, this is very important. It's not the state's or the bureaucrats' role to educate our children. They play a role, but it's not the primary role. The primary role belongs to the parent. And parents should have a right to set curriculums. We should have a right to control what happens to our children at school. We should have a right to dictate, in some respects, exactly what takes place in that school. And that also includes the place we send our kids to school. Other states are talking about school choice, Arkansas, Florida, and others, and it seems to be working with a high degree of success. And the key there is this. Let's not trap these kids in these failing schools. If you've got a school somewhere out there and it's failing, it is fundamentally unfair to tell a kid and those parents that he or she can't transfer. It's just the wrong approach.
Yeah, and the main argument is, well, you're going to defund the public school system. Well, that's not true at all, actually. What's partially going to happen. Now, will some parents choose to take the tax dollars and go to private school? Sure, and that should be their right. After all, that's their tax dollars, folks. But secondly, what's also likely going to happen, should school choice become a reality in Mississippi, is there are some very good public school systems in the state. There are some that are very, very much coveted by others who live in other districts. But what's likely going to happen there is there's going to be transferring within the public school system from one to another. And the ones that perform highly and with integrity and aren't doing the brainwashing garbage, they're going to get students flocking in left and right.
Absolutely. It's a perfect model for accountability. My wife's a school teacher. Her mother was a school teacher. My dad was a school teacher. So we know a thing or two about education. And if you talk to teachers, what they want is they want the resources in their classroom.
Yes.
If you talk to the teachers' unions,
not in
the central office. If you talk to the teachers' unions, they want it in Jackson or in Washington, for goodness sakes. And it's the same thing with this choice issue. It's fundamentally unfair to trap a child in a failing school. Every teacher I know will tell you that. It's fundamentally unfair. And the administration then yells, they're going to lose money. No, you're not. The money's going to follow the child. And if you do a really good job educating, you're going to get more than enough money for your schools. There's accountability. You're not teaching to test anymore. You're competing for the best and the brightest, and that makes us all better.
Yeah, and these state tests, I mean, this goes back to Common Core, and they can call it whatever they want. I know they don't call it that anymore because that name got clobbered, rightfully so. But, these statewide tests are way overrated.
Yeah.
You'll talk to teachers and they'll say, look, they don't like it. They'll say, I have to basically teach for testing instead of teach for learning.
Absolutely.
And that's a backwards way of looking at things. But to your point about, the bureaucrats, whether it be in Jackson or in Washington, if you look at the budget, there's way too much money tied up in the bureaucrats, not enough money tied up in the classroom. These schools, these teachers, man, we've got some good teachers in Mississippi that work very hard, at each and every day. So, this is about improving education in Mississippi. And I just think we've got to get it done, Chris, because Mississippi, we've got a super majority, you said, in the legislature. There's no reason we can't have school choice.
I agree. And it goes back to a couple of things. If you have parents that have the rights to send their kids different places, competition naturally takes over at that stage. Schools will seek to improve because the improved schools naturally will get the gravitation of the kids to those schools. Essentially like a magnet, right? You pull the kids in because you're doing so well. Mm-hmm. But also, as we educate our kids and the system grows and the kids become smarter, they become a more active and intelligent workforce.
Yes.
In our state, more than anything else, we need to abandon the old ways of doing things, the way Lyndon Johnson taught us back in the 60s, right? Lyndon Johnson says, listen, sit there, wait, we'll take care of you. Here's your check. That's the wrong approach.
Yes.
We need jobs, not handouts. Good, well-paying jobs in this state would solve so many issues, from health care all the way down to homelessness.
Yeah.
Jobs. Every focus we do should be on jobs. A good educational system helps us get there.
Yeah. And we've also got to teach our young people that you don't have to go to college to be successful.
That's exactly right.
It's fine if you want to go to college, college doesn't equal automatic success.
That's right. That's right.
We need some trades going on here. We need some plumbers, some welders, et cetera, some car mechanics. I mean, there is a great need for these specialty positions.
Isn't it amazing how we got away from that? We're a blue-collar state, and I love that part of Mississippi. But somewhere along the way, we got to thinking that a college education was necessary for success.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. We have a great oil field group of workers in Jones County. They work hard and make great money.
Yep.
Welders, right? People that work with their hands, construction workers, even farmers, which Thomas Jefferson thought were the perfect citizens, right? Because they were so self-reliant. Yep. I love that part of Mississippi. Now, if you would have gone to college, more power to you. But if you don't, man, yeah, we have a trade for you, and you can do very well in that trade.
Yeah. You know, Chris, one thing that I've been harping on for some time now, I think you and I talked about it a couple years ago, is the state reliance on the federal dollar.
Ugh.
I mean, Mississippi is one of the largest, if not the largest, taker of federal money, so much that we're, like, drunk on it around here. And I think long-term, Chris, as Washington continues to weaponize the dollar, as far as weaponize the dollar coming into each state and they put all these stipulations on it, I think it's so much more important, and this really gets into growing the economy, so much more important for us to wean ourselves off the dollar, the federal dollar.
Yeah, two issues there. Liberty is not for sale. And so often Washington will dangle those dollars out there in exchange for concessions over education, over health care, whatever the case may be. But Mississippi is a sovereign state and should be treated accordingly. So we have to send a strong message that our liberty is not for sale, but also to point out the addiction we have to federal spending and how damaging that is to the economy overall.
Yes.
Harvard did a study a few years ago, back in 2010, and they followed these congressmen and senators as they rose in seniority. As they rose in seniority, they were bringing more money into their districts. Harvard demonstrated that that actually caused economic consequences that turned downward less productivity in those districts because it crowded out private investment. And that's the great irony, I suppose, in some respects of what we've done. We're still in that old system for more than 130 years where we depend disproportionately on public spending.
Yeah.
And we're still almost dead last economically.
Yeah.
I think there's a connection there.
Yeah. And this also ties into the income tax.
Absolutely.
The Governor Reeves, yourself, and others tried, Philip Gunn tried to get through, and that thing got watered down. I mean, we passed something, but it was watered down, was it not?
It was terribly watered down. Delbert Hosemann did not want to eliminate the income tax. He didn't want to decrease any taxes. He had to because of all the political pressure that was applied.
Yeah.
But here's what he's saying. He's basically the only reason we still have a state income tax. Then he's going to tell you that he gave you the largest tax cut in state history. He didn't even vote on it. But more importantly, what he gave you was peanuts. Ask Philip Gunn.
Yeah.
Ask the House members. Ask the governor. They'll tell you what happened. Right now, Mississippi will be phasing out its income tax, but for Delbert Hosemann.
Yeah. You know, Chris, we shouldn't have to twist the arm of our leaders to do the right thing.
That's right.
And that's what's so frustrating is we've got a prime opportunity. Washington's gone rogue. The Marxists are marching on our country. We don't have the luxury of selling somewhere else.
Right.
This is it. You talked about the Reagan quote this morning. Chris, this is it. There's nowhere else to sell.
That's right. If you can't hold the line in this state, it's over. There are only a few states left where there's still strong, independent, mighty, conservative people.
Yeah.
Mississippi is one of those. Old traditions, old ideas, beautiful ideas like Christianity and self-reliance, right? Beautiful concepts that have made this country strong since its inception. So Massachusetts is lost. California lost. New York lost. The Deep South. There's a fighting chance here.
Yes.
Let's build a fort here, and let's preserve our values. Let's preserve our institutions, and then let's push back against Washington. If we do that, we can balance the system. Join Florida. Join Texas and push back and be loud and active and proactive and get something done.
Yeah. Mississippi needs to be a leader. I mean, we lead on some things, but we got to lead on more folks.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of getting envious looking down in Florida, and DeSantis is taking credit for everything. Folks, we got to step it up in Mississippi.
Absolutely.
Because we have the numbers, if you will. We just got to do it. Hey, Chris, thanks so much for coming on the
Core. Thank you. It's awesome, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it. What's where can folks read more about your work and your campaign?
Go to SenatorMcDaniel.com. It's just SenatorMcDaniel.com or on Facebook, Senator Chris McDaniel.
Great. All right. That's State Senator Chris McDaniel, also running for our lieutenant governor in this cycle. We've got a primary coming up in August, and the general election, of course, is in November. Only a handful of states are in their election cycle at the statewide level. And Mississippi is one of them. By the way, we've got all the information you need, or we will at least in the coming weeks and months over at iVoterGuide.com. We'll continue to publish that information as it becomes available, and we'll definitely have it ready by primary election day in August. Thanks so much for joining the show. We'll be back with one more segment to go.
The AFA Resource Center has all your favorite items. Everything from books, movies, shirts, and even hats. Introducing AFA's polyester and twill hats, starting at just $18. Whether you're into fashion, a collector, or you're just having a bad hair day, these hats are just what you need. You can buy one for yourself or a friend. Purchase your AFA hat today at resources.afa.net.
What does the American Family Association stand for? We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I'm Corey, and this is my story. I was going through some financial troubles paying off my credit cards. I was paying high interest rates, and it just wasn't getting any better. And I knew I had to do something. So my mom told me about Trinity, and so I decided to call. Trinity was able to do something that I couldn't. I'm paying off my debt, I'm saving thousands, and things are really looking up. I promise you guys, you will not regret it when you call Trinity, because it was such a relief and less stress in my life, and it was the best thing I could have done for myself, because once I called Trinity, they took care of me, and I felt such a relief, a weight off my shoulders, and they are a Christian-based company. I love it.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
I'm Corey, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our health care. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly healthcare costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with healthcare costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 29 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you with us today on the show. We just had State Senator Chris McDaniel in studio with us. If you want to go back and listen to that interview, you can by subscribing to the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, At the Core Podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we are live streaming the video over at streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. And we're on Facebook, At the Core on Facebook, At the Core on Facebook, live streaming there as well. My word of the show is plethora, and we do have a plethora of ways for you to connect to the show. By the way, I mentioned it in the first segment, July 6th through 8th is our Marriage Family Life Conference. Registration closes this week. All right, marriagefamilylife.net, marriagefamilylife.net, or afa.net/events. That is coming up in July, our annual Marriage Family Life Conference. I do want to introduce our next guest for the program. Lee Watson's with us. I met him a few weeks ago down in Jackson, Mississippi. He's a founder and CEO of Advocate for Frontline Families Advocacy, or FLFA, and he's with us now. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Hey, give our audience a little bit of your background, Lee. Where you got your start, what your story is, and how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, so me and my wife, we've been married for about 20 years. We have about 20 years of full-time ministry. And 15 of those years we spent pastoring. And then God began to transition us into foster care-based ministry. And so we had two biological children of our own, and we had some major complications with pregnancies, with both with my wife and with the two children we had. And so taking doctor's orders, we decided not to have any more children. And that led us into the foster care system. And we spent about 9 years in foster care here in the state of Mississippi, and then began to see a bigger need because we actually brought in a sibling group of three that we ended up adopting, and took about 4 years to actually adopt them through the whole process. And so we began to see a need that there needed to be a louder voice for foster families within the state of Mississippi. So an opportunity happened where we could become chaplains to the foster care community, and that's what we're doing currently.
Lee, this is a big, big void, if you will, or need around the country. This is a need for foster parents. But I think the larger need, Lee, is to refine the process. And you've done it, and you're doing it now. I know people who have fostered many, and I hear the stories, some of them positive, most of them horrendous. As far as the process goes, it's an unmitigated disaster run by the government. Tell us about your story and the problems with the foster care system that need to be fixed and that you're currently working to be fixed.
Yeah, absolutely. So nationally, the average foster family only keeps their doors open for about 15 months. And so here in the state of Mississippi, we lose about half of our first year's worth of foster families, new foster families that actually come in within the first year. We lose about half of those, and we lose another about 30% of those after the second year. And a lot of reasons behind that, and the main is a lack of communication and a lack of support. There is a serious issue between communication between CPS and the foster parents who are taking care of these children. And then there's not really any type of support out there for them when they are facing situations that surround that child that they're currently taking care of. And so that's one of the main issues that we're seeing within foster care and the issue. So give you an example about how bad it's really been. In 2018, we had roughly 3,000 foster families here in the state of Mississippi. In 2022, the latest numbers we have just a little over 1,800 foster families now. And we also have roughly about 4,000 kids that stay in the system in the state of Mississippi one way or another. So you see, there's already a shortage of foster families that as it is.
Let me ask you this, Lee, and I'm going to speak because use the terms because I know a little bit about how this works. But the reunification process, okay, the way I understand it, at least in Mississippi, and this is probably applicable around the country, is the primary goal of the government and most of the judges here that are involved is reunification. And what I'm talking about is reunifying the parents with their the children with their biological parents. All right.
That's correct.
But, and that's a virtuous goal. All right. Just stating that up front with no caveats at all. But Lee, correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes that can go too far. Will you speak to that?
Yeah. So what ends up happening a lot of times is either it's a handful of things regarding that reunification process and the issues surrounding it. So, yes, that is the number one reason of why a child is in foster care, and the number one job of CPS is for reunification. But a lot of times what ends up happening is that there's delays in the court system proceedings, or there's delay in paperwork, or a social worker that did not actually send in the right information for the case in itself onto deciding whether or not that child needs to be reunified, or do they need to start the proceedings of TPR, which is termination of parent rights. Then that leads into the adoption proceedings. And so there is a lot of loose ends when it comes to how the court processes cases. And that also varies from county to county. We have some judges that do a great job in reunification or getting that child into position to be TPR'd. And then we have other counties that are a little bit more relaxed, where they don't have that judge isn't necessarily motivated to push towards TPR or reunification. And so that child just stays in limbo.
Let me ask you this, Lee. Mississippi passed just this session. This is last session, and you were there for the bill signing. You were very critical in this passing. But the foster care parent, the Foster Parents Bill of Rights, House Bill, I believe 5510. Tell us what this law that's now been signed by the governor. Tell us some of the things that this law will do.
So what it actually does, it gives you roughly about 20 different statutes that a foster parent can actually follow when it comes to what their rights are while they're taking care of a child in their care. And what we have noticed, one of the biggest hurdles that we have seen within the foster care community, we started a Facebook group page several years back, and it is focused strictly on foster parents. And one of the number one complaints that they gave us in return as we were polling them was that they didn't know what their rights were as a foster parent. And there's a lack of communication between CPS and a foster parent. So what this bill actually does, it gives clear communication between what the responsibilities of a foster parent is and what their rights are, so that they can better fight for that child that they're taking care of. Because regardless of what the government wants to say about it, they are a caregiver or they are a extension of family in that child's life while they are actually taking care of that child. And they have every right to know what are their rights when it comes to that child and how to take care of them. So what this bill does is actually give clear direction so that a foster family knows what their rights are. And then if those rights are violated, then they have actually the ability to file a grievance with the state to protest their rights that have been violated.
Let me ask you this, Lee, and I may be getting a little bit too much into the weeds here, but is this law retroactive? Meaning, can someone who was already a foster parent, like last year, and is still currently, does this apply basically to all foster care situations, or is it just new foster parents?
This is for all foster families. Okay. So in July the 1st of 2023, this bill will officially go into law. And so anyone who's a foster parent in the state of Mississippi, this law will apply to them.
Let me ask you this, Lee. I'm sure as you continue to expand your knowledge on this topic, although you've got a lot going on for you here from an experience standpoint, is this applicable for other states? Meaning, do other states have these same issues and hurdles?
Yeah, absolutely. So this idea actually came from a friend of mine in Georgia who actually pushed a foster parent bill of right in his state. And if I'm not mistaken, we roughly have about 13 states across America that actually have passed similar laws. And it could be applicable to any state across America. And it's just to simply state that these are what the rights of foster parents are within each state so that they know how to better take care of their placements that are in their care.
Mm. Hey, Lee, tell our audience if they want to find out more about your work and are even interested in passing something similar in their state, how can they reach you?
Yeah, so we have a website. It's www.frontlinefamilies.net. And there's a lot of information about what's going on there and how you can even get behind us and help promote this, because our next issue with this bill is to make sure that the state and CPS actually adheres to the new law. So somebody has to be there to actually push that. And then if someone wants to contact me directly, they can at lee@frontlinefamilies.net, and that is my email address, and they can contact me there directly.
Hey, Lee, thanks so much for coming on the Core for the program.
Absolutely.
And all the work that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate it, Lee. That's Lee Watson, founder and owner of Frontline Families Advocacy Group, and doing some excellent work there. And the reason we want to bring Lee on and these others is because these are the folks actually on the ground doing the hard work. And they've got extensive knowledge on the root causes and the root problems with a lot of these issues that we talk about on the program. And this need for foster parents is a big need all around the country, with the continued breakdown of the traditional biblical family structure, with the nuclear family breakdown happening. You've got more and more kids in need. I have a lot of respect for couples that open their home to the foster system, because it can be very much an emotional roller coaster that you go through with these children and with their biological parents and the system itself. And just a lot of energy poured in there, a lot of sacrifice. So a lot of respect goes out to all the parents that all the families that participate in foster care. Once again, that URL for Lee's website is frontlinefamilies.net. We'll drop this on the podcast page as well on at the core at afr.net and on the app if you want to check that out. One other story I want to get to before we wrap up the show is what happened over in San Francisco. You know, Chris McDaniel and I, the state senator, we were talking about how our ideological opponents, they know no bound. They have no line in the sand. They will attack, and they will come after anyone and everyone who dares to push back against their insanity. Well, this was in San Francisco, the liberal bastion of San Francisco, and there was a lead singer. I'm not big on music, at least secular music, and I'm definitely not big on oldies, but. Some of you may recognize this name. I don't, but some of you may. Twisted Sister, lead singer Dee Snider. Bobby's shaking his head, so he's probably heard of this guy before. Anyway, he was going to sing and open up at this LGBTQ++ sexual deviancy pride parade in San Francisco. Well, he got canceled, and here's why. He put out a tweet and said this. He said, "You know what? Talking about this whole transgender, gender dysphoria with minors," he said, "you know what? There was a time where I felt pretty too." And this is, of course, a man talking. He said, "I'm glad my parents didn't jump to any rash conclusions," which is so true. That's what's happening here. So he just stated the obvious, took a swipe, of course, at these people who are promoting child gender mutilation, child sex surgeries, etc., taking a swipe at them. And this LGBTQ people, this transgender community in San Francisco said, "No thanks, you're not welcomed at our parade." And that just proves, folks, when we talk about the subject of children and protecting them from this insanity, some people will say, "Oh, we wouldn't try to do that. We're not trying to go after kids, you know, yada yada yada." Yes, they are. And this is a prime example when anyone criticizes what the left is doing by sexualizing our children and destroying their futures, they come after you. And this shows that this gentleman was right over the target. So maybe this will open his eyes to the broader sexual deviancy movement and cause him to turn from his ways. Thanks so much for joining the Core. Glad to have you on with us. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.